Well, good morning. It's my pleasure to be with you 2 weeks in a row. Last week, we talked about God's greater love and just how he demonstrated that love for us and that we would then love others. And part of what we talked about was that to remain in his love, we are to obey his commands. That is how we will remain in his love. So today, I thought we would take a look at one of the commands that he gives us. And remembering from last week that we are to remain in his love so that his joy in us will be complete. So today, we're going to talk about forgiveness. We have been commanded to forgive as Christ has forgiven us. And so today, we're going to dive into the topic of forgiveness. It would be crazy for me to think that none of you have ever experienced pain by someone else's selfish acts. Of course we have. We have all been hurt by others' decisions. And if we accept that truth, then we also need to accept that we have probably hurt someone else by our own selfish choices. The wounds we carry or the pain that we have are evidence of a sinful nature, and it plagues our world. So what can we do about it? Today, I want to be really honest about forgiveness and about hurts. We've all been hurt. It's a part of our world. And when we try and brush over that or take it lightly, we're missing this command about forgiveness and how it will affect us. So today, I want to be really clear that forgiveness is not denying that pain happens, because it did happen and it's real. And it's also not putting on a happy face and a mask in front of the wounds that we have. We want to bring our whole selves to God today. We want to know forgiveness, experience forgiveness, and be able to give others forgiveness. So that's where we're going today. You may be a little surprised then to realize that our text is coming from the Old Testament and not the New Testament. I love the fact that the Old Testament is preparing the way for the New Testament. There's so many ways that it reflects what's coming. And so today we're going to be looking at the story of Joseph and finding our text starting in chapter 37. I am not going to read from chapter 37 all the way to 50. Because some of you have already peeked ahead and say, but our verses come out of 50. That's okay. I'm going to try and give you the quick summary of what happened starting in chapter 37 leading up to chapter 50 so that we get the full picture of where Joseph is at and where this message of forgiveness is coming from. So if you want to follow along, we'll be flipping through the chapters rather quickly. But starting in Genesis chapter 37, we meet Joseph for the first time. We find out that he is one of many brothers, but he is the favored brother by his father. His father lavishes great gifts on him and even makes for him this great robe. And the other brothers are sort of jealous of the father's love for him. Joseph also is given some dream visions of the future, and he freely shares them with his family, which are not very happy about them. His dream is that his brothers will bow down to him, and this does not go well with their feelings of jealousy already, and so they are pretty unhappy. If we skip ahead to finishing out that chapter, we find out that his brothers want nothing to do with him, and so they devise a plan to get rid of him. They first talk about killing him, And Reuben says, wait, don't shed his blood. Let's not do that. We don't want to do that. Just go throw him in a well over there. And so Reuben's supposed plan is to be able to rescue him later. But the rest of the brothers throw him in the well. And when they see some traders traveling by on their way to Egypt, they get a great plan. Hey, we can make some profit out of this guy. Let's not just throw him in a well. Let's sell him. Let's get some money out of this guy. So they do. They sell off their brother into slavery, and he begs for his life. Don't do this. Why? What are you doing? Doesn't matter. Brothers are done with him. Off you go. Bye-bye. But they have a problem now. They got to go back to dad without brother. What are they going to say? What are they going to do? So they devise a plan. They kill a goat. They cover that beautiful robe that they've now torn up. And they say, this is all we found. He must have been shredded to pieces by an animal. Sorry, Dad, there's nothing left. And of course, Dad is very upset. He's grieving. He's mourning. And he refuses to be comforted by anyone. The brothers don't confess, don't let him know that, Joseph's actually really alive, if that makes you feel any better. No, they keep it to themselves. So they watch their father suffer and grieve. Skipping ahead to chapter 39, we find that since Joseph has been sold into slavery, he's been purchased and is now in Potiphar's house. And everything he does is going well. He's finding success in everything. And Potiphar has put him in charge of everything and doesn't worry about anything except what's for dinner. All he cares about is his food. So Joseph was about 17 when he was sold into slavery, and he's probably a handsome, strong guy. Potiphar's wife takes notice of him and wants him to sleep with her. Joseph says, No, I'll have no part of that. Potiphar's been a good master to me, and things are going well. I'm not. And she tries to seduce him. She accuses him of things he didn't do, takes his cloak, and convinces Potiphar that he has done something wrong. So Joseph's time in Potiphar's house comes to an abrupt end while he is thrown into prison. Now let's pause for a minute. Let's take into account what Joseph has been through so far. His brothers don't like him. They've tried to get rid of him and have succeeded. He's been separated from his father. He's been accused of wrongdoing that he hasn't done. And now he sits in jail. If I'm Joseph, I have a few things to be upset about. I have a few reasons to hold some grudges. And I'm a little upset that my life has been really messed up by other people's wrongdoing. I haven't done anything to deserve this. How come this is all messed up? So, Joseph sits in jail with a few others, and we have the cupbearer to the king and the baker. And they are in prison as well. They have dreams, and they're sad. And Joseph says, well, why are you sad today? He said, well, we don't know what our dreams mean. Joseph says, well, tell me, and God will interpret them for you. So the cupbearer ventures a go. He says, all right, here's my dream. And Joseph says, okay, this is what it means. You're going to get back to your position, and life's going to be great. And the cupbearer is like, yeah, okay, I like this. The baker hears that, and he's like, well, he got a good interpretation. I'll go ahead and tell him my dream. This should turn out well for me, too. Baker tells him his dream. Sorry, baker, your interpretation doesn't go so well. You're going to be dead in a couple days, dude. So a few days later, the cupbearer and the baker are called out of prison, and it happens just as Joseph says it will. God has given him the interpretation of their dreams. Now, the cupbearer had said, when I'm out, I'll remember you. Joseph says, remember me. He says, yeah, I will. I'll remember you, sure. 2 years later, Joseph still sits in jail. If I'm Joseph, I'm getting a little frustrated here. And I'm losing my faith in people. Why do I even want to participate with people? I mean, all I'm getting is the short end of the stick here. It's never turning out right for me. But then Pharaoh has a dream. So we've made it now to chapter 41, and nobody can interpret Pharaoh's dream. And all of a sudden, the cupbearer goes, oh yeah, there was this guy in prison. You know, me and the baker, we had dreams, and he told us what they meant, and it actually happened the way he said it was. Maybe you want to talk to him. So Pharaoh sends for Joseph. Joseph is brought from prison to Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells him his dream, and Joseph says, God will interpret it for you, and this is what it means. And Pharaoh says, all right, you're number two in charge now. You take care of all of these people. You say there's going to be times of plenty and then times of famine. Well, you organize it. Save us. You're in charge. So Joseph assumes the role of second in command, and he takes on preparing the people of Egypt and everywhere else for years of famine that are about to come. He gets married, he has some kids, and things seem to be going pretty well. Then in chapter 42, we find that his brothers show up. So here's what happened. Back at home, in the land of Canaan, they were going through famine as well. And Jacob says, look, I heard that there's grain over in Egypt. You boys get together and go down and buy us some grain. I'm sending you 10, but I'm going to keep Benjamin here with me. You see, Jacob and Benjamin have this kind of messed up relationship, to be honest. Jacob's willing to send his other 10, but he doesn't want to send Benjamin because that's Joseph's only brother, the only other child born to Rachel, who was his favorite. And now he's very protective of Benjamin. He doesn't want anything to happen to him. So the rest of you 10, you go and see what happens. Hopefully it works out well for you, but I'm not willing to risk Benjamin. He stays here with me. And the other 10 are like, okay, we'll go. We'll go get some food. And so they set off. And they go down to Egypt. And Joseph recognizes his brothers. But they don't recognize him. You see, about 20 years or so has gone by since his brothers sold him into slavery. He recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And he starts to speak harshly to them. Why are you here? You're spies. You've come to see where our land is unprotected. What are you doing here? And they, no, we're not spies. We're just hungry. We just want to buy some food. We're, you know, there's the 10 of us, and then there's another brother back home and our father. And Joseph starts to ask questions, and Joseph decides, you 10, to prison with you. And I have to think at this moment, Joseph has power. He's in a place of position. There's a bit of memory of the past. And he says, nope, the 10 of you go to jail. If this is true, that you're not really spies, let your other brother come, and then I'll know you're not spies. That's not going to happen. Our dad's not going to let him go. It won't happen that way. Then we don't really know what happens here for a minute. So I'm going to interject my own thoughts here. I can't find this in chapter 49a, but this is my assumption. You see, 3 days go by before we know what happens next. we find that the brothers have been in jail for 3 days. During that time, I believe Joseph and God had to have a little conversation. God came and did a little knock, knock, knock on his heart and said, Joseph, what are you doing? And I have to imagine that Joseph said, I got a right here. Do you realize what's in my past? But thankfully, that's not where it stops. You see, whatever happened in those 3 days, we find that Joseph's words to his brothers are, because I fear God, you will live. So whatever happened from that day to this day, Joseph's reason for doing what he does next is because he fears God. Because I fear God, you will live. So here's the plan, boys. This is what's going to happen. You're going to leave one brother here. The other 9 of you are going to take provisions back to your family. But you're going to bring your brother back home to me so that I know you're not spies. If you don't, you won't get anything else from me. Okay. So that's what they do. They leave Simon in jail. The 9 of them gather up their stuff. They take off and they go home. And when they get home, here's Dad. What do you mean you left Simon in prison? And you told him about Benjamin? Why have you done that? Don't you know I'm trying to keep this guy safe? Why did you have to tell them that Benjamin even exists? They didn't need to know that. Well, he was asking questions and we just kind of told him. And Dad says, well, fine, but we're not going back. Sorry, Simon, you're stuck in prison. But I'm not letting you take Benjamin back. That's it, we're done. So the family eats the provisions that they brought back. But unfortunately, the famine continues. And Jacob gets to the point where he says, all right, you guys got to go back. No way, Dad, we can't go back. Not unless you send Benjamin. He said that we can't go back. I can't send Benjamin. I can't send Benjamin. So Reuben steps up and he says, Dad, trust the boy to me. If I don't bring him back safely, you can kill my own kids. Doesn't convince Dad, not yet. So Judah steps up and he says, all right, trust the boy to me. And if I don't bring him back, you can hold me accountable. You can blame me for the rest of my life. Eventually, Jacob says, all right, if I suffer loss, I suffer loss, but I've got to send Benjamin with you. Okay, go. And the brothers are like, finally, we could have been there and back twice by now. So they take Benjamin and they go back again. But in chapter 42, before we get to them coming back a second time, the first time when Joseph is speaking harshly to them and they get sent to prison, we find these words in Genesis 42:21. The brothers say, surely we have been punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded for his life from us, but we did not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us. You see, in the midst of all this turmoil and all of this struggle, they're looking back and they're saying, it's because we did that. That's got to be the reason why we're in such a mess right now. So here they come a second time. Reuben and Judah have promised to protect Benjamin. Joseph comes back, he sees them, he recognizes them, he sees Benjamin. He even cries a little, but he hides it. And he tells the people, prepare a feast. These people will eat with me today. He's so excited, but he hasn't revealed himself yet. You see, back when they were talking about all this problem has come on us, Joseph used an interpreter. He didn't know, or his brothers didn't know, that he could understand everything they were saying, but he could. He knew where things were at with his brothers. Oh my gosh, all this trouble for what we've done in the past. And now they're back, and he says, let's have a feast. He brings everybody together. They enjoy a good time together. They talk. He hasn't revealed who he is yet, though. When he does reveal himself, this is what he says to them. We're in Genesis 45, and this is not the verses on the screen. These are a few verses before that. But Genesis 45, chapter 4, verse 4, says, Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there have been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping. But God has sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save the lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father of Pharaoh, lord of the entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord over all Egypt. Come down to me, don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you and your children and your grandchildren, your flocks and your herds, and all you have, I will provide for you here, because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will be destitute. He throws his arms around them, he cries and he weeps over them. The brothers are a little stunned. But he provides them provision and he's gonna send them back to Dad. Tell Dad this. But he's got a little side plan. They just had this great meal together, right? Off they go. Well, he tells the attendants, give them their food, give them back their silver. Oh, and by the way, put this silver cup in that guy's bag. Okay, so they do what they say. And off the brothers go. And then he sends the attendants after them. Go get them and tell them they stole my cup. So the attendants catch up to the brothers and they say, what are you doing? Why are you stealing? We didn't steal anything. We didn't do anything. I promise. We're not spies. We're not, it's all, we didn't do anything. In fact, if you find anything, you can kill that guy. The attendants say, well, how about I just make him a slave? Let's look. So they go through, starting from the oldest, work their way down. Oh, Benjamin, what are you doing with this cup? Not Benjamin! We told Dad and my kids and my blade. Can you imagine the things that they were thinking? We're gonna come back without Benjamin. We can't even go back, right? So, they all go back. and they got to figure out what to do. Joseph says, look, go back and get my dad. Take these chariots, bring your whole family, bring everyone, come here and live with me. If we fast forward quickly through the rest of the chapters, Jacob comes to Egypt, chapter 47. They settle in the best parts of the land after being introduced to Pharaoh. The famine continues. In chapter 48, Jacob blesses Joseph's kids. Chapter 49, Jacob blesses all his sons in Egypt. They're all living happily ever after, right? And then dad dies. So our verses on the screen today, our text today, come from Genesis chapter 50. And this is after all of this has taken place in Joseph's life. Dad has died, and this is where we're at. It says, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph saying, your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they've committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of your servants, of the God of your father. When their message came to him, Joseph wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph had an incredible perspective at this point in life. He says, look, you intended it for harm. I get that. But I've moved on from there. God has taken this and he has placed me here so that I could save many. God has a plan and a purpose for me. I'm moving forward. There's many lives to be saved. That's why I'm here. But the brothers, you see, they're stuck in the past. They're constantly looking back. Oh, it's because of what we did. Oh, no, what if he holds a grudge? Oh, it's because... And they are stuck in this place. But Joseph isn't stuck. Joseph has learned to forgive. Somewhere along the way, he learned to say, God, here it is. Here's all the hurts. Here's all the pain. Here's all the yuck and mess of my life. You got a plan for me to move forward? I'm all in. When he had the opportunity to punish his brothers, he didn't. And when they come to them at the end, and they say, we're your slaves. We're sorry. He cries. I don't think he's crying over his own life at that point. Brothers, don't you know I've forgiven you? Brothers, let's move forward. I'll take care of you. It's going to be okay. I told you to begin with today that I'm fascinated at how the Old Testament brings to life things that will happen in the New Testament. Now, I know the parallels that I'm about to present aren't perfect, but in this story, I see Joseph as a parallel to Jesus. Bear with me, if you will, and see what I see. You see, Joseph is chosen by his father. He's loved and he's blessed. So is Jesus. He's sent ahead of his family for the purpose of saving them. So is Jesus. Joseph is betrayed by his family. The ones who should love him reject him. Jesus came to those who were supposed to be waiting for him, who were supposed to love him, and he was rejected. Joseph suffers separation from his father because of the wrongs of others. So did Christ as he hung on the cross for us. He said, God, why have you forsaken me? Because the weight of our wrongdoing was upon him, not his own. Joseph doesn't hold a grudge. He forgives and he provides for his brothers and their family. Jesus doesn't hold a grudge. He forgives. And he desires so much to provide for you. His love, his peace. See, we're kind of like the brothers in this story, though. The brothers are envious and rebellious. It leads them to sin against Joseph. They cover up their sins and they watch others suffer at their own hands. They see their dad's grief. They hear Joseph pleading for his life. The brothers are always thinking of or being reminded of their sin. When things go wrong, they look back and say, it was because of what we did. They are afraid of Joseph when they find out who he is. Sometimes I think we take that approach to God. If I really came with all my hurts, if I really came with all that I did, would he really love me? The brothers beg for their lives. They bring gifts to Joseph. They bring their families to him. But still they fear punishment. You see, the brothers have never really been set free by forgiveness. Today's message is entitled Finding Forgiveness. All of us have hurts in life, and I'm going to compare them for a moment to a physical hurt. Because it's easier and more tangible sometimes. My daughter Benita was camping with us, and she decided to jump off a granite rock and double back her knees before going into a lake. Well, she didn't get out quite far enough, and those knees went right down the granite rock. So you can imagine the wound that was left. There was nothing there to stitch together, it was gone. My husband brought her back to the campsite, laid her in a hammock, and started picking out rocks out of the wound. We've all been hurt. We all have wounds. And some of us have rocks in those wounds. God desires so much to pick out the rocks. Why? To bring healing. It makes sense in a physical wound. We understand it. Healing will come. But are we willing to really put our lives in God's hands for the same healing? See, Benita has a scar now on her knee. She runs, she plays, she jumps, she falls down. That scar is a reminder of a past hurt. But you know what? It doesn't hurt anymore. It's healed. Our past hurts aren't just going to disappear. But I do pray that we will find forgiveness, that we will find healing. When Joseph had the opportunity to punish, he didn't. He healed the relationship with his brothers. You see, in our story, the person who lives the free and fruitful life is Joseph. Yeah, the one that went through all the yuck. Because forgiveness had been experienced in his life. The ability to give it and the ability to receive it. The ones who are struggling in life are the brothers, the ones who haven't experienced that forgiveness. So today, my hope is that we will find forgiveness. Some of us have open wounds, and we need God to do a healing work in us. Some of us need to extend forgiveness to others. Some of us need to know we are forgiven. There may be scars, but they will be testimonies of God's healing work in our lives. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. And as we close today, I'm just going to take a minute and ask you to bow your eyes, bow your hearts, and let's just present our lives before God. God, we all need forgiveness, either to extend it or to receive it. Father, we thank you that you have already offered us forgiveness through your work of your Son on the cross. God, we just want to lay our lives at your feet right now and ask that you would do the healing work that needs to be done. That forgiveness would be found in our lives. Thank you for how much you loved us, that you made a way to heal the broken relationship between us and our Father. Help us to forgive as you have forgiven us. Amen.